You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation throughout the years here. Great to be on with you.
Last time you had me on, I told you guys were the best in the business, and I really mean that. Your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I mean, I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to for good football coverage, elite basketball coverage, and everything recruiting.
You know, I really appreciate you guys, Bison Report, for what you guys do for Bison football.
Here's your host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglow.
What is up, Bison fans, and welcome to this playoff round of 16 edition of Bison Report Radio, brought to you by Gateway Chevrolet. I am your host and the publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglowman. Joining me today, number three in your program, number one in your hearts, Trevor Gebhardt. Trev, how are you, buddy?
Doing well, my friend. Another good week to be here recapping a game and previewing another one. So playoff football, nothing better.
Yeah, we'd certainly like to be doing the exact same thing next week. Do though want to take time, you know, we sort of, I don't even remember if we hinted at it or not, sort of the timing where before the last show we knew former NDSU defensive end Reed Ryan was I think a year younger than Zach, very highly touted recruit, one of the nicest kids we've ever come across. Certainly interviewed Reed on his way into the program. Was this Wisconsin defensive player of the year, played at Wanakee, and believed that there's some complications after workout at the University of Minnesota Duluth, and then he has passed away. He was 23 years old. And even just saying that is gut-wrenching.
Yeah.
It's terrible. I think people have a tendency to say nice things about people after they pass away, but you could just see the commitment from a kid that didn't, you know, get necessarily rewarded all the time with playing time. Didn't necessarily probably make the impact on the field that he was hoping for, especially as we mentioned, Wisconsin High School Defensive Player of the Year. And for, to a man, his teammates and coaches to speak about him the way that they did, the impact that he had on the program every day. I mean, I knew Reed, but we weren't certainly the best of pals or nowhere close to the level of relationship the guys who played with him or Zach or Quinn or, you know, those guys. But, you know, we talk about program kids, and sometimes it's sort of meant as a slight to someone who didn't work out maybe the way that we had hoped from a recruiting perspective, or someone who, you know, doesn't get on the field as much as they probably would have liked. But really what a programming kid is what Reed was. And that's somebody that stayed committed to North Dakota State, regardless of playing time, regardless of stats, regardless of all that. And yes, he did eventually, you know, hit the portal and end up with the University of Minnesota Duluth and, you know, trying to have a little bit more on the playing time side at UMD, but certainly put his time in for the Bison on scout team and just left a mark on that program that is extremely obvious.
Yeah, sad deal all around. I mean, anytime a young individual unfortunately passes on for circumstances that are to no fault of anybody, it's just a sad deal. And especially when it's an individual that has such high praise from so many folks that he interacted with. So clearly he made a positive impact on a lot of people. And there's, it's pretty evident by the amount of folks that have chimed in on his life and how they viewed him after his passing. So definitely a sad deal. Never want to see that happen to anybody. Just a sad, sad deal. And it's, you know, obviously news, so we're covering it.
Yep.
There's really nothing more that needs to be said. It's just a sad deal. And it's very unfortunate.
It is. Prayers, thoughts go to Reed's family. I mean, that's, I think, chief. Anytime you have a parent that has to bury their child. That is, you know, as a parent of two and, you know, stepdad of four, I cannot even imagine. So, anyway, to lighter fare, which would certainly be, Tommy Schuster, the quarterback at UND, hit the transfer portal. I'd be interested to see the interest level in Tommy. Also Easton Kilty, who was very, very close to my first team, MVFC team, versatile, very good offensive lineman. And, he is going to, he is going to be, 100% somewhere, wherever he wants, pretty much. We've seen the Auburn offer. We've seen the Texas Tech offer. If you prove that you can be a dominant offensive lineman, even at the FCS level, someone will find a spot for you. And that was certainly Easton. And just been impressive. You know, people give me a hard time about how tough I am on UND. I'm not going to be tough on Joe Pollack. His development of Willetsko, his development of Kilty, his development of Ventrelli, I would guess that somebody with bigger purse strings is going to be checking in on Joe Pollack real, real soon. Julian Darcic back. That's exciting stuff. I think Oscar Benson did a tremendous job to kind of grab that spot, which is useful for the program in the sense that Oscar has a little bit more eligibility left than Julian does. So that was great. But even, you know, as what Julian's career has been about for the most part, which is running down with his literal hair on fire on special teams. I mean, just to have him as a special teams weapon for the playoffs, I think has tremendous value. And of course, if he rotates in at the Sam linebacker position, that has value as well. But just for him to come back and run down on teams and smoke people, I think is going to be valuable. And he's probably a better fit than, you know, whoever was playing whatever his spot may be on punt D and on kickoff and all those other things. So excited to have Julian back. In Pro Bison news, Nash Jensen got in the game, which was very exciting. I had a pancake block, had some rough moments as well, but that's a very, very good interior defense. And just so cool to have Nash Jensen at right guard for the Panthers and have Dylan Raidens at left tackle for the Titans in the same NFL game. I mean, it's not every FBS program that kind of stuff happens for. It's certainly not every FCS program. And just so cool to see what these guys continue to do on Sunday. So awesome to see the development that's available to kids here at North Dakota State. I'm going to do a quick check in here, and then we'll really bring in Trev on the basketball team. And they look like what they look like. They look like a young team. They look like a super talented team, which is what they are. They went into Grand Canyon, had a double digit lead, lost that game in their house. Went out to San Jose State, had a double-digit lead, lost that game in their house. Now, San Jose State, and I would encourage everyone to get to the Shack because it's going to be one of the bigger – I mean, San Jose State's a Mountain West team, Tim Miles, all of it. If we can't pack out the Shack on Monday for that game, I don't know. I don't know. Timmy coming back, a Mountain West team in the Shack, they can beat that team. I don't know that they'll necessarily be favored, but they can beat that team, and that would be an electric atmosphere to have 4,500 people in the Shack for that deal. Let's get people in the building for that. Anyway, I they just seem to run out of gas or, you know, a little bit of that home comeback ref stuff happened. It certainly wasn't on the officials, but you get up 12 in somebody else's gym and they start to come back and the crowd gets into it and you're getting every call at the rim and they're allowed to be a little bit more handsy on defense as the whistles start to get swallowed. And I don't know if maybe there's an opportunity for Dave to take a timeout in certain spots to sort of stem the tide when it was at 6 instead of at 0. I don't know. Winning on the road in the NCAA is tough. Winning on the road in against, you know, theoretically higher level opponents in Grand Canyon and San Jose State is extremely tough. I'm still looking for maybe that rotation to get shortened, you know, still playing basically 10, 11 guys. I'd like to see Fetterson just run with that backup five spot. We know what Strite is and he has value certainly, but I would like to see more from Fetterson. You saw against Montana, he was the first big off the bench. And I would just kind of like to see how that would play out. There's times that Josh gets a little bit overmatched in the post defensively, And like, there was one time, and it's not all the time, but there was one time he caught a rebound, missed a point blank put back layup, and San Jose State's run was allowed to continue. And it's like, even just that offensive board and put back layup, like, that's discouraging in the middle of a comeback when you get a stop and then it's a bucket. And it's just stuff like that where, we haven't seen necessarily a ton of the offensive production from Josh Fetterson, more length and maybe just a guy with a little bit of more offensive skill as well. I know he's younger. There's the trust factor there. I think I'd like to see that run a little bit more. Okay. Trev, you gave me a 2-minute maximum here on this Drake recap. So
I really did. I don't know what else to say about it.
Yeah, we'll do what we can. Going to try and stay there. Basically, you accomplished what you wanted to accomplish. Everybody seemingly stayed healthy. It didn't look like anybody took too nasty of a hit. Cam walked off with a shoulder deal. Seemed like that was fine. Kubis was not playing and was in a boot. Sounds like he's going to be fine. Got some valuable reps, I think, at a different position for Jake Rock. Got an interesting look at a kid that I think will be a sixth-year kid next year. And did not come out for senior day, or he'll be a fifth-year kid or sixth-year kid next year, did not come out for senior day. So you wonder if he's not one of your starting five next year, especially with Westberg not returning or going out for senior day. You got some spots to fill. If Jake Rock shows that he can be a right guard, even at his height, that's great news for next year, because it would allow you to keep Gray Zabel at right tackle and or move him over to left and sort of figure out, you know, kind of what you've got moving forward. But Jake Rock played in a manner that makes me think he can be part of your five next year and be productive. And that was an exciting development. I know it was against Drake, but, you know, you start to get that old man strength. You get to be 24, 25 years old. So credit to Jake and the way he played. All 64 kids who dressed got in, and then Cam was just Cam. Some ball placement stuff. And people, oh, it was Drake. Go look at some of those throws. Some of those throws, specifically the stutter go to Raja and where he hit. Understand, people, I love Raja Nelson. Raja's 5'8", okay? It is not easy to hit a 5'8" receiver on a downfield throw because his catch radius is small. Right. That was a dot. I mean, I love Ryan Smith. You love Ryan Smith. How many verticals did they run Ryan Smith on?
Well, the reason we ran him is because he was so fast and he would just outrun everybody. But as far as like going up and getting the ball, none. I mean, that wasn't part of the game. We also had Zach Raw to be able to do that too.
100%.
So,
and you know, Ryan was your deep overs, your sweeps, your all that stuff. And Ryan was a great player, but I'm just talking about, you know, that go ball to those shorter receivers is tough. It really is.
Very, very tough. Yeah, you've got to be able to put it on the spot. And going 10 for 11 is indicative of that. Cam's gotten a lot of flack. A lot of people defended him as far as like going 9 for 9 and kind of taking slight at the comments made earlier about him holding the team back. And I know they were halfway in jest, halfway of
– well, not only 9 for 9,
but
23 yards of completion, and most of it was air yards.
Yes. Like I get it. It's against Drake. So it's like, you're looking at something surface level. If you're taking a statistic and then applying it to the opponent, you still have to produce it.
Dude, some of those throws are hard to hit at pro day.
They are on air. It's hard to do. Like, it's not, and you go 10 for 11 for 206, two touchdowns. He's thrown at 75% completion percentage on the season. I don't understand how you can knock a kid for that. That blows my mind. But anyway, it's neither here nor there. Played phenomenal. He's going to have to do it again this week.
All right. Okay. This episode, as it is all football season long, is brought to you by the good folks over at Gateway Chevrolet. Chevrolet. Folks, four-wheel drive weather is on its way. I love my Chevy Silverado that I got from the good folks over at Gateway, and they've got a ton of four-wheel drive and all-wheel drive options. So check them out at gatewayfargo.com, where their entire new and used inventory is available for you to peruse, and then run on over to the I-29 frontage road there in Fargo and talk to one of the extremely knowledgeable and very polite and, frankly, friendly sales staff. Go say hi to my buddy, John Cole. I got all sorts of pals. I actually worked at Gateway in a life so, so long ago. Think about that now. And I sold cars there in 2013. We're almost going to be past the decade anniversary, but have never, ever, 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 ever myself bought a vehicle that was not from the good folks at Gateway Chevrolet. All right, Trev, the meat and potatoes. We did a good job. We're only about 15 and a half minutes into the show. Means that we've got time to break down this Montana State game.
Mm-hmm.
I put out a tweet. I do that sometimes. It is over on the Bison Report feed, not my personal feed, of NDSU's unbelievable run against the Big Sky in the playoffs. And I'll just read it for people that maybe don't have Twitter, don't care enough to look. But, and plus, it just isn't going to take that long. All right, 2010 at Montana State, win 42-17. 2010 at Eastern Washington, loss, sort of, 31-38.
Yeah.
It's on there.
Not a fumble.
2015 at home against Montana, 37-6. 2018 at home against Montana State, 52-10. 2018 national championship game, Eastern Washington, 38-24. 2019 at home, Montana State, 42-14. 2020 spring game at home, 42-20, Eastern Washington. 2021 Montana State national championship game, 38-10, and it wasn't that close. Then 2022 versus this very Montana team, or excuse me, versus Montana. Montana's on this side of the bracket. They're not the team they're playing this week. They are the team that's talking a bunch of junk. Now I'm future casting. The win 49-26. So Trev, they've never even been kept in the 20s. Can you explain to me? I mean, everybody just calls, you know, big fluffy, all the insults that gets thrown at, you know, the Big Sky. But what is it? Why does this keep happening?
It's purely matchups. So traditionally and historically, if you go top to bottom between the two conferences, the Missouri Valley plays a more hard-nosed style of football, run the ball, play good defense. The Big Sky is more spread it out, throw it, chuck it. So throughout the course of the season, you're not used to playing that type of football where it requires you to tackle well. It requires you to play good defense in order to come out with a victory. And that's what playoff football is about. Playoff football and championship football, running the ball well, playing good defense, and not turning the ball over. And when you have those things, that's the results that you just noted. It's purely a matchup thing. And that's what college football is all predicated on, is purely matchups. It's not the NFL where everyone's good. And you're going to win off matchups just because you've got like the best players in the world. It all comes down to that. Now, Montana State is shifting towards that, a la Brent Vegan being the head coach there and him understanding that and him knowing that, okay, we got to get a little bit beefier up front and kind of win in the trenches. So, I mean, I think that's why this matchup is so intriguing, is because you've got a little bit of that shift happening overall. But by and large, historically, that's why you've had that. As a result, in the Valley versus the Big Sky overall in the playoffs is 27-19. So winning at a pretty good clip in that manner. And I think it is indicative of the type of football that is played throughout the course of a season.
Fair enough. What were your memories of the kind of the shocking nature of that win over Montana State back in the day? Because that to me was kind of the wild one. I think everybody was pretty comfortable. I think it was James Madison, oddly enough, that first winner. It was some sort of presidential name, either James. I think it was James Madison though.
In 2010?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was Robert Morris. Robert Morris was the first round. Yeah.
Okay. I told you something presidential.
Yeah. Bobby Moe. So like my memories of that, it was just a different time. I mean, it was the first year that NDSU had ever made the playoffs. I was a redshirt, so I didn't play in these games.
Sure.
the game against Robert Morris, you had a conference champion, so an auto bid. Nobody knew what to expect. And, of course, we just ran all over them, and it was the results that we now know in these AQs versus the top-heavy conferences. So going into that Montana State game, you're playing against a ranked opponent. You're on the road in the playoffs. There's no expectation. Whether you win the game, you lose close, or you get blown out, all would have been like, okay, makes sense. Now, the way that that game played out was, again, kind of goes back to what we were talking about, matchups. The Valley historically runs the ball really well and plays good defense. And it was a tight game going into the fourth quarter. I believe Montana State was even winning. And then we just exploded for four touchdowns, a lot of it through long runs by DJ McNorton and explosive plays. And so it was just kind of a wear them down type game. And then that was really kind of a turning point as far as who we knew that we had from a personnel standpoint of being able to go and compete at this level and make a deep playoff run. So it gave the program a lot of confidence in terms of like, okay, what we're doing does work. And it was, I don't know, I watched it from a living room television set. So for me, it was just a lot of fun to watch that fourth quarter play out.
That's awesome. And everybody remembers the national championship game 2 years ago. Personnel are certainly different. You know, no, there's no Hunter Lipke, who was a key part of that game. Mm-hmm. Christian Watson's playing on Sundays right now. Cody Mock's playing on Sundays. Cordell Volson's playing on Sundays. For that matter, Troy Anderson from Montana State is playing on Sundays. So different personnel, but there are guys in this game that are the same. Tommy Malott's still involved. Cam Miller's still involved. There's plenty of guys that, you know, remember that game. How much do you take from something like that other than just kind of, I'm sure Montana State remembers it, and I'm sure NDSU's coaching staff is trying to just be like, hey, that means nothing.
Right. It's definitely a rallying cry for probably Montana State, just knowing the last time he faced North Dakota State in the playoffs was a national championship game in which he got blown out. They probably feel like, you know, our starting quarterback got hurt early.
Let's be real. They've only ever gotten blown out. Like, there is not a close Montana State, North Dakota State game that exists.
Playoffs. Yeah. Yeah. I don't correlate much from the 2021 season to now. There's certainly a fair number of guys that played in that game. And I'm sure if you're North Dakota State, you feel pretty confident in that manner, just because of what happened the last time he played in the playoffs. Montana State, it's more of a, okay, now this is a different time, different place, different team. You're coming in our building. How dare you do that to us again? So I'm sure that's a motivating factor in Bozeman, no doubt. But that's really more locker room speak than anything. I don't think there's any correlation between the two.
Okay. One dimensional. That's something that's been thrown around. And for me, when I watch both of these teams and sort of try and look at it from a scout's eye, it's NDSU has struggled defensively, and I don't think there's any way around that.
Mm-hmm.
When you can do both. And South Dakota State has had a tremendous amount of success jamming the ball down North Dakota State's throat, but maybe because of NDSU's not wanting to get beat by the Yonke twins, Griffin Wilde, Zach Hines, Tucker Kraft in years past, et cetera. It is the threat that Gronowski is a good player and has excellent weapons that requires you to not sell out to stop Isaiah Davis in the run game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the tall kid who had a little cup of coffee in the NFL from Montana State, the receiver. But, like, that kid's not walking through that door, okay? This Montana State team, and, hey, they've got five different guys averaging at least 8 yards per carry. Malott has run it – or Chambers has run the ball 59 times. Malott has run it 50 times. And then Julius Davis, who I think is a Badger transfer, has run it 103 times. They've got five guys up over 8 yards a carry. And they don't really throw the ball that much, that successfully, or with that high of rate of a completion, which honestly I would say is even maybe a little bit more concerning when you talk about how theoretically easy it is to complete passes when everybody's obsessed with stopping the run. So for them to be in the high 50s, low 60s completion percentage when everybody's obsessed with stopping the run, that's even less impressive. And if I am selling hope as a Bison fan, why you'll win this game, it's because NDSU's been pretty good defensively when they're only worried about one thing. Any other takes there, Trev?
No, I mean, you took the words out of my mouth of what I wanted to, what I wanted to discuss on the pod. You stop the run, you win the game. Simply put, Milan Chambers can certainly be capable of throwing the football. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that that's going to happen in this game. They certainly could. But if you stop the run and force them to throw, it is going to bode well, because most likely you're probably winning the football game if they're going to start chucking it around the yard to play catch up. And it forces them to try to get creative in the run game to make up for a lack thereof if it starts off that way. So for North Dakota State, stopping the run will be pivotal. Will be pivotal to, one, get a lead, and then, two, force them to try to throw it around the yard and create turnovers.
One, I think
what this game will come about. Which
you saw, or go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. I was wrapping up saying that's, I mean, that's what this game will come down to, in my opinion, is winning the turnover battle. But yeah.
Right. And I think what you saw, you know, from a game script perspective too, from Montana State, like when they got down to Montana, they're very uncomfortable. They're like NDSU. I mean, I'm not going to say NDSU doesn't have this problem as well. They're like NDSU. They're uncomfortable down 10 or 14. That's not who they are. They're very much, I mean, Brent Vegan has very much built this program in the image of North Dakota State. And like, we're going to get ahead. We're going to run the ball. We're going to squeeze you out of your possessions. We're going to shorten the game. And then when we're up 10 or we're up 14, we're going to play pass defense. We're going to pin our ears back. We're going to come get your quarterback. And then when you punt it back to us, or once we turn you over, we're going to hold the ball for 8 minutes and probably score. And so when you get Montana State into that other game script, it becomes a problem.
Right. And the identity of this team, it's exactly what we talked about at the beginning of this pod. They know that that is what creates a national championship contending type program. So for them to create that same formula is exactly what they need to do to give themselves a chance at winning in Frisco. But it can create a problem if you're not able to go over the top in any capacity. Again, I think they are capable of it, but I haven't seen anything that's going to show that says if they get into that scenario, Montana State, that is, same thing with North Dakota State, really, that it's going to be, hey, we can chuck it around the yard to be able to complete a comeback and get into the type of game that we want to play. So yeah, keeping them one-dimensional and stopping that is gonna bode well, really, for either team in this game.
Yeah, stop the run, win the game. They've got a legitimate All-American tackle in Marcus Ware, so it'll be interesting to see if, you know, we get the Shaka Rokes, Jake Kava kind of extravaganza over there, or if Dylan Hendricks is the one that goes up against Ware, because Dylan's having that first-team All-Valley season at the defensive end position, so it'll be interesting to see if they kind of try to avoid him, or if they just, you know, kind of play their normal spots. Or he'll be interesting to watch, because he's a legit All-American, and I think if he was a little bit bigger, I'd be thinking about him as a pro as well. He's been fun to watch. I had a chance to watch 2-3 games of theirs, and you go and look at his pass protection numbers as far as pressures allowed, sacks allowed, hits allowed, they're very, very impressive. On the Bison side for offense, you have to block Brody Grebe. I'm not 100% sure on the pronunciation there, but he is an absolutely high level defensive end. 53 total quarterback pressures, including 11 sacks. Now, Pro Football Focus doesn't do half sacks, but he's also leading the team in stops, which is insane. And a stop is a tackle that results in a failure for the offense based on down and distance. Almost always, folks, your stops are going to be linebackers just because they make a, you know, make a tackle for a 0 yard gain or a 1 yard gain. They fit a run successfully. 0, 1 yard gains, even often 2 yard gains, are going to be classified as a failure. For a defensive end to do that, that's super impressive to me. For him to really truly lead a defense like that is crazy. And I will say it's a good matchup for NDSU. I mean, if you're building a defense that, you know, where do you want their best players? Well, you want to where your best players are. And right now, Jalen Sundell and Gray Zabel are two of the best players on North Dakota State's team. So that's a tolerable situation for this Montana State defense to be super talented at the DN position or at that edge position. So that is sort of tolerable, but it'll be a big day for NDSU's tackles, Trev.
Yeah, well, again, it comes down to matchups, and winning this one will be pivotal, especially if you're going to try to drop back and, you know, get some third and mediums to convert. If you want to get ahead of the chains, maybe in the pass game a little bit, that is going to be critical. When you got a guy who's, you know, 6'2", 248, and a Montana kid himself, he'll be playing with his hair on fire. So the fact that that matchup does bode well for NDSU, they're going to have to execute. But making sure that he doesn't get home to the quarterback will be certainly important.
For sure. It will be. Lavelle Price is a very good player. Not a ton of ball production, but he grades out extremely well. I've always said that about corners. Like, I love tips, interceptions, all those things. But if you can just be in your guy's shirt and make him not an option, that's the most valuable thing to me. I mean, that's kind of like your stylistic difference, right? Like, so CJ Smith, he was in everybody's shirt. Marcus went and got the ball. Those two players are just very different of what they bring to your – and not that Marcus got beat all the time, but, like, they just played the position in different ways, and sometimes it's different strokes for different folks. I very much enjoyed CJ just, like, shutting down a Jake Winicky and just, like, no, today's not your day, buddy. Like, I'm in your shirt. And – Marcus, you know, set the world record for pick sixes or whatever. So, like, that was also fun. Those are also
led the Jets in interceptions when Darrell Reeves was on the team and he wasn't even starting. Yeah. I mean, one note on this kid, though. He's coached by a former teammate of mine, Brian Shepard.
Yes.
Shout out. You know, Shep, love you to death. I if you're listening, he's not.
Busy guy.
Shep, I hope he doesn't play well. So I hope Shep's not doing his job this week, which is not the case. I know him well. He's doing a phenomenal job. I would have to imagine they're going to put him on Rajah when he's flexed out. And that'll be an interesting matchup to see played out. Just knowing the type of coach that is behind that young man and to see this just to see how it plays in the pass game. So for me personally, that's just going to be a fun one to watch.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how NDSU does or doesn't attack him. I think he's pretty clearly their top guy, and that's why it's nice to have, you know, both Rajah and Eli Green, as well as Braylon Henderson operating at a high pace. And then you can't forget about Zach Mathis as another opportunity. And that's why and then that, by the way, isn't even talking about Stuffel or Carson Williams or even at the tight ends. And that is what, you know, I know having a guy like Christian is super fun, and they won a lot of games with Christian. But that is what's fun about having a bunch of guys playing at kind of a similar level where, you know, you can't just, okay, well, if we take Christian away, we should be all right. You take Rajah away, or you take Eli Green away, you can still get beat by Mathis. You know, you take Mathis away, you could still get beat by Eli Green, which is kind of brings me to the next point too, which is, hey, are we really sure that NDSU can't run the ball? Montana State allowing 3.8 per carry as a defense. A lot of times you see teams that are allowing almost 4 a carry to, like, the regular world. All of a sudden they're allowing 6-7 a carry to North Dakota State. It's certainly what we saw in Frisco 2 years ago. And I think that really could be the killer for Montana State. You see the way that defense is predicated on those two edge rushers. If NDSU's running the ball for 7 a carry, those two edge rushers don't matter. Those two edge rushers are trying to spill power. Those two edge rushers are you know, playing QB read. You know, I mean, it just, if NDSU can stop the run and run the ball, they're going to win the game, period.
Yes. Well, that same can be said for Montana State. Either team that stops their own, like we said over and over throughout this entire pod, that's whoever rushes for more will win the football game. And as far as what you alluded to with going from 3.8 yards per carry and what they're allowing, oftentimes kind of inflating when you get to these type of matchups, a la Valley Big Sky, I think a lot of that has to come down to the efficiency of the quarterback play. Because when you've got weapons on the edges, like we've alluded to, you got Eli, Rajah, Mathis, Braylon Henderson, you cannot load the box with nine guys knowing full well that NDSU is going to want to try to jam it down your throat and win the time possession battle and then not turn the football over and, you know, score 28 points and advance on to the next round. You are not going to be able to do that in this game. Load the box with nine to stop the run because you will get beat by an efficient passing attack. So that I do think plays out very well for the Bison in terms of a matchup scenario against Montana State. And you could see that swell up to six or seven again. I would obviously like to see that, but it will be very fun to see how that plays out and how those, you know, chess pieces come into play on Saturday.
All right, Trev, I'm going to go first with my prediction because I've been checking the weather. And for me, without weather being an issue, I really have felt like we've got a potential shootout on our hands. I don't know that. I mean, you just look at what NDSU does to the Big Sky. And at this point, it's like, I need to see someone shut down NDSU from the Big Sky before I ever predict it to happen. Just a stylistic difference in the way that conference plays football and the way that NDSU does. And that stylistic difference has become a big problem for the Big Sky in basically every matchup. As I said, NDSU has never been held under 30 points in the playoffs by a Big Sky opponent. That is bananas. To get into the 30s or 40s or 50s every time is absolutely bananas. I don't think it changes. I actually don't even think that NDSU breaks their streak of basically winning this game by double digits. I've got the Bison 41-28.
Well, okay. A lot of things to go through. My prediction, I'm looking at this, and this is like in the Valley notes.
Sure.
On playoff matchups between the Big Sky and the Missouri Valley. The Missouri Valley has won every single year with the exception of 2017, where there was only one matchup. I do not recall who that was or who played, but the Big Sky won 1-0 in terms of matchups there. The rest, you've got 2-1, 1-0, 2-0, 3-2, and 2-1 in concurrent years there. All in favor of the Valley. Right now, the Big Sky's at one, the Valley's at zero, which of course is, here's a soundbite for you, North Dakota losing last week at home to Sacramento State. I want to make sure I got that out as a soundbite. They can go and clip that all they want. So I tweeted about this in my predictions that I do in the playoffs week to week. You've got three matchups between the Valley and the Big Sky in this round. One conference has to win at least two of those. Okay, of course, one conference can win three. However you slice it, one conference has to win at least two. If I'm a betting man, I would take the Valley just based off percentages and what has historically happened to win at least two of those. The way this matchup plays out in terms of the weather being less of a factor.
I kind of just said that without saying it. So there was talk about flurries and super gusty winds. It's going to be 38, sunny, and winds at 10 to 20. And the way that that stadium is built, winds at 10 to 20 are maybe going to affect the game, but not like in a massive, massive way.
No, it won't. I mean, but anyway, I'm saying a lot to really get to the point that, like, I do agree that a shootout could be on the docket here, which would be super fun to watch. I do think both teams are pretty evenly matched. Both have one win over current playoff teams. Of course, North Dakota State's being against Southern Illinois, and then Montana State being Sacramento State. Other than that, they've both lost to every single playoff team, which is just kind of really interesting. But from all that, I agree with you that until the Big Sky shows that they can just overmatch the Valley, it's hard to go away from that. It's hard to go away from trends until it's proven otherwise. With that being said, Both teams, I think, could struggle to tackle early. And I think you're going to have maybe an early swell of points in the first half, and then both teams will settle in. And it's going to come down to who wins the turnover battle. I think NDSU ends up pulling away in the fourth quarter and winning 39-35.
All right, folks, there you have it from Trevor Gebhardt, NDSU 39-35, a clean sweep from the folks here at Bison Report, expecting NDSU to advance to take on the winner of South Dakota and Sacramento State. Thanks, Gateway Chevrolet. Thanks to Trev, and thanks all you for listening. Have a great weekend, and go Bison.